Northern Europe in the 13th century was full of dangers. Constant quarrels between feudal lords, unstable borders, and poor roads that made travel extremely risky. Yet, the North Sea and the Baltic Sea bustled with lively trade. Ships laden with all kinds of goods sailed between the many ports of cities. At the center of this vibrant activity stood a unique commercial organization that controlled a significant share of Northern European trade, the Hanseatic League. In a world where power belonged to kings and knights, trade was a constant challenge, and security seemed like an unattainable luxury. How, under such conditions, did merchants manage to build not just a trading network, but a true economic superpower that dominated Northern Europe for centuries? Without a king, without a single army, without a permanent capital. This is the remarkable story of the Hanseatic League, a unique alliance of cities that defied traditional authority and forever changed European trade and politics. Prepare to discover how merchants could influence monarchs and why, despite its might, the Hansa eventually disappeared from the map of history. For a long time, Constantinople, the capital of Byzantium, was the main hub of medieval trade. This grand city, at the crossroads of Europe and Asia, and known as the New Rome, remained the largest city in the Mediterranean for centuries. Its many merchants, guilds, and markets, its advantageous geographical position, and its control over important land and sea routes, such as the Varangians to the Greeks trade route and the Great Silk Road, made the Byzantine capital a bridge between west and east, north and south. Eventually, due to the Crusades and internal crisis, the Byzantine Empire began to decline. The initiative in trade passed to the Italian city-states, the most powerful of which were Venice and Genoa. These became commercial empires, acting as intermediaries between the kingdoms of Western Europe and the weakened Byzantium, soon replaced by the powerful Ottoman Empire. Meanwhile, Northern Europe remained somewhat apart from these major developments. Distance from the leading Mediterranean trade centers, the Viking Age, and the decline of the Varangians to the Greeks route created a kind of vacuum in trade power. Only in the 11th century, when the era of Viking raids ended, did maritime trade begin to revive gradually. At the same time, medieval states were taking shape. The Holy Roman Empire, the Novgorod Republic, the kingdoms of Poland, Norway, and Denmark. Populations were growing, and so were cities. With the development of agriculture came increased demand for goods from distant Asian lands. Unsurprisingly, domestic and international trade expanded. Overland trade routes still mattered, but sea routes across the North and Baltic Seas were becoming increasingly important, connecting various regions and states. Still, the seas of the High Middle Ages were full of dangers, piracy, unpredictable weather, while merchants on land faced their own troubles. No standardized laws or protections existed, and the borders between the lands of powerful feudal lords meant customs duties and sudden conflicts. Individual merchants, guilds, and even whole cities often stood defenseless before such threats. Transporting goods efficiently and safely was a constant challenge. In this unstable world, the need for collective security, economic cooperation, and mutual protection of trade interests became acute. This urgent demand for safety, stability, and trust laid the foundations for one of the most powerful and enduring trade alliances in history, the Hanseatic League. The League of Merchant Guilds and Cities did not emerge from a single founding treaty. It grew out of several alliances and agreements among the trading cities of northern Germany. In its early formation, the cities of Lübeck and Hamburg played key roles. Lübeck, an important city on the Baltic Sea, served, thanks to its founding role and influence, as an unofficial capital. Hamburg was a major port on the North Sea. In 1241, Lübeck and Hamburg signed the first formal agreement of what would become the Hanseatic League. Its aim was to protect common interests and secure the overland route between the two cities. This treaty is often seen as both the predecessor and the starting point of the Hansa. Over time, other North German cities such as Bremen, Wismar, Rostock, and Stralsund recognized the advantages of such cooperation and began making similar agreements. The term Hansa itself first appeared in a document in 1267. All these cities stood at the intersections of maritime and river routes, giving them great trading potential. Their shared interests were clear: combating piracy, standardizing contracts, securing monopolies on key goods, protecting trade routes, and influencing German princes as well as foreign rivals. This shared vision of security and prosperity was decisive in creating a powerful, decentralized trade alliance. The Hanseatic League had no capital. It was a horizontal union. Its activities were coordinated by periodic assemblies of members, most often held in Lübeck. The League's unique structure was one of its most distinctive features. It had no single ruler or central government. As a confederation of independent cities, it was bound together by agreements and common economic interests. Assemblies were not held regularly, but convened as needed. The first such assembly took place in 1356. Major decisions required consensus, highlighting the autonomy of all member cities. Each city, regardless of size, had only one vote, and only member cities could send representatives. Some cities had full membership. Others, such as Dutch and Swedish towns, held only informal associate status. Within the cities themselves, merchant guilds formed the basis of power. They resolved disputes and set rules. The League's internal laws were often reinforced by city statutes and later by additional agreements governing merchant conduct and trading practices. These rules fostered trust and predictability, crucial for long-distance trade. Membership in the Hansa brought many privileges, but also obligations. Compliance with agreed commercial norms and contributions to collective defense. Its decentralized yet cohesive structure allowed cities to retain independence while adapting to changing circumstances. The Hanseatic League's economic might rested on monopoly and was enormous. It controlled the trade in the most valuable goods and resources throughout Northern Europe. Salt was the foundation of Hansa trade, used for preserving food, especially fish, and supplied from Lüneburg in Germany. Herring from the North and Baltic Seas was another profitable commodity, and the League controlled its distribution across Europe. Fish, herring, and cod were staple foods in medieval Europe and came from Skagen in Denmark, Bergen in Norway, and Wismar in Germany. Grain from the fertile lands of Eastern Europe, especially Prussia and Poland, was shipped to Western Europe to feed growing urban populations. Another important item was fur. Furs, valued for warmth and luxury, came from the Novgorod Republic. Timber, essential for construction and shipbuilding, came from the vast forests of the Baltic region. Goods moved in all directions, to cold Scandinavia and far-off Novgorod, deep into the Holy Roman Empire, and to markets across Europe. By controlling the production and safety of essential goods, their transportation and distribution, the Hanseatic League accumulated colossal wealth. The introduction of clear rules for currency exchange and financial practices simplified operations and significantly reduced risks. Time-tested trade networks strengthened the Hanseatic League's economic dominance. Over time, it became a leading player in the economy of Northern Europe and an influential organization on the pan-European level. To control its vast trade network, the Hanseatic League established a number of contours, trading posts. These were permanent trade stations, often with autonomous status, located in key foreign cities. The contours were self-governing communities of Hanseatic merchants, who possessed exclusive rights and operated under special laws. There were four main contours. Bergen in Norway was the center of the fish trade. Thanks to this, the League almost completely monopolized the export of dried cod and sold Norwegian fish throughout Europe. This trade brought it enormous profits. The Hanseatic merchants in Bergen lived apart from the local population and had their own laws, church, and school. London in England was also an important Hanseatic League trading post, This allowed Hanseatic merchants to trade with preferential taxation, have their own courts, and maintain large warehouses in the capital of the English kingdom. In London, the Hansa's most valuable goods, such as grain, furs, and timber, were exchanged for cloth and wool. The city of Bruges in western Flanders was the most important intermediary, and a kind of gateway connecting the Hanseatic League with Western Europe and the key markets of the English and French kingdoms. In addition, Bruges held the status of a leading financial center, which facilitated Hanseatic trade with Mediterranean markets and ensured access to profitable goods such as luxury items. The easternmost trading post was Novgorod. Hanseatic merchants brought metals, cloth, and wine there, and returned with furs, honey, and wax. All these trading posts were not merely business hubs. They became genuine diplomatic tools that allowed the Hanseatic League to influence foreign rulers and protect its own interests in distant lands. The contours clearly demonstrated the Hansa's considerable ambitions and organizational capabilities, as it sought to control every trade and supply chain in Northern Europe. Among other things, these contours served merchants as embassies, provided military protection, and even offered political asylum. The Hansa was not only a merchant's alliance, and was not limited to economic interests alone. It was a true political force. When its interests were threatened, it did not hesitate to forge alliances and peace treaties, impose blockades, and even start wars. The clearest example of the Hansa's political power was a series of wars in the 14th century against the Kingdom of Denmark, particularly the decisive conflict that broke out in 1361. The cause of these wars was the violation of the Hanseatic League's trade rights. In response, the member cities of the organization assembled their own fleet, drove the Danes out of the historic province of Scania, and forced the Danish king Valdemar IV Otterdag to sign the disadvantageous Treaty of Stralsund in 1370. This peace treaty ended the war and became a true triumph for the Hanseatic League. The merchants not only regained their former trading privileges, but even gained new ones. They obtained control over the fortresses in Scania and influence over the herring market for a full 15 years. But that was not all. The Hanseatic League secured the right to vote and the ability to intervene in the election of local kings, clearly demonstrating its influence over power in Northern Europe. It was a rare case where an alliance of merchant guilds and market towns dictated terms to a European monarch. In the following century, the Hansa again went to war with Denmark, which at the time was part of the Kalmar Union together with its allies, the kingdoms of Norway and Sweden. The war began in 1426, caused by a new trade conflict. King Erik of Pomerania, ruler of all three Scandinavian states, opened Baltic sea trade routes to Dutch ships and imposed a new customs duty on all foreign vessels, including those of the Hansa. Several Hanseatic member cities, namely Hamburg, Lübeck, Wismar, Stralsund, Rostock, and Lüneburg, refused to accept such treatment. They declared war on the Kalmar Union and blockaded Scandinavian ports. This war ended in 1435 and marked yet another victory for the Hansa. The member cities not only freed themselves from the customs duties, but also obtained additional privileges. Their ally, Count Adolf VIII of Holstein, received the Danish duchy of Schleswig. The Hanseatic League also temporarily seized the fortress of Helsingborg, which hindered Dutch ships from freely sailing in the Baltic Sea. Shortly after the defeat in the war, Erik of Pomerania lost his throne and was succeeded by Christopher of Bavaria. The Hanseatic League was a powerful player on the diplomatic stage. It concluded agreements with rulers and states, consistently defended the rights and privileges of its merchants, provided them with legal protection, secured maritime routes, and controlled taxation. The collective strength and joint efforts of its member cities often exceeded the power of individual states. This allowed the Hansa to dictate its own terms to them and sign favorable treaties. This political instrument was extremely important, enabling the League to preserve its trade monopolies and control an enormous trading network. The economic and political power of the Hanseatic League also influenced the culture of Northern Europe. Trading posts and communities of German merchants helped spread the middle-low German language. Under the influence of the Hansa, it gained the status of a lingua franca in the north. It was used in trade and document circulation. German also played a significant role in commercial operations in the regions of the North and Baltic Seas, even influencing local languages and dialects. Hanseatic cities were distinguished by their unique architectural style: Gothic buildings of red brick, majestic churches, and town halls. Thanks to the Hansa's influence, the architectural style of brick Gothic spread from Scandinavia to the eastern shores of the Baltic Sea. It also left a significant architectural heritage in cities such as Lübeck, Tallinn, and Vilnius. The legal traditions of the Hansa also affected Northern Europe. The so-called Lübeck Law became a model and left a noticeable mark on the legal systems of many regions and cities, including Riga and Krakow. It formed the basis for municipal self-government, trade agreements, and contributed to the development and unification of law not only in Northern Europe, but also in the Holy Roman Empire. Thus, the Hanseatic League was also a powerful agent of cultural influence. It shaped the architecture of European capitals, the linguistic features of regions, and the legal framework in Northern Europe. This organization did not merely sustain itself financially. It also built urban civilization. The Hansa established the power of merchants in opposition to the secular and religious authorities of the Middle Ages. At its peak in the 15th century, the Hanseatic League included more than 200 cities. Nevertheless, despite the striking success of this organization, by the end of that same century, its decline had begun. There were several reasons for this. First of all, the age of great geographical discoveries radically changed global trade and opened new sea routes. The traditional trade networks of the Old World in the Mediterranean, North, and Baltic Seas lost their importance. In their place appeared new routes leading to the New World across the Atlantic Ocean and to India along the African coast. The change in trade routes led to the Atlantic ports of Spain and Portugal, England and the Netherlands, displacing the cities of the Hanseatic League. Lisbon, Seville, and Antwerp played a key role at the time and became Europe's leading trade centers. The Hansa's position was also shaken by the rise of national states. In the Middle Ages, when feudal fragmentation dominated, the Hanseatic League skillfully took advantage of the weakness of central authority in many European countries. However, the centralization and consolidation of national states changed the rules of the game. Now, the rulers of Scandinavia, England, and Eastern Europe could challenge the merchants' dominance. They wanted to develop their own national economies and build trading fleets, so they began to limit the influence of the once powerful organization and contest its privileges and monopolies. In addition to external problems, over time, the Hansa began to be torn apart by internal conflicts. The decentralized structure of the organization, which had once been an advantage, eventually became the League's weakness. The Hanseatic League lost control over its trading posts, and disputes between member cities became frequent. Some Hanseatic cities sought new opportunities outside the organization. As a result, their loyalty waned, and their collective strength disappeared. The last assembly of the Hanseatic League's member cities took place in 1669 in Lübeck. Although formally the Hansa still existed at that time, it had long since lost its power. Despite cooperation between some individual cities, by the end of the 17th century the organization had almost ceased to function as a single economic and political entity. The decline and disintegration of the Hansa marked the end of this powerful and unique supranational structure. Nevertheless, it left behind a great legacy and strongly influenced the formation of Northern Europe. For several centuries, the Hansa was the economic center of this region. It developed commerce and established trade routes that connected different peoples and cultures, fostering the growth of medieval cities. The Hanseatic League pioneered complex commercial practices, influenced international law, and ultimately clearly demonstrated the power of collective action by individual member cities. The influence of this merchant dominion is still visible in European architecture, in the spread of the German language, and in the very concept of a common market. The Hansa played a leading role in the financial prosperity and stability of Northern Europe. It also facilitated the exchange of many ideas, innovations, and, of course, goods. The Hanseatic League is a unique historical example of commercial cooperation. Imagine, without a single ruler or central authority, this union managed over several centuries of its existence to achieve economic dominance over a vast region. The Hansa greatly influenced Europe's political and cultural development, becoming a precursor to modern transnational corporations. Its history is a vivid testament to how people can effectively cooperate for mutual benefit.